Okay, we're going to have some a little time to talk about what you just heard, and we have a question. First off, give us your name, because we want to identify you and turn it over to the local church.
My name is Mike.
Yes.
No, my name is Jack.
Jack, yep. Thank you. What's you have a comment or a question, Jack?
Clarification, actually.
Okay.
Earlier in your talk, you mentioned Proverbs a few times, and I wonder if you were meaning to say prophecy at the time.
I don't know. I'd have to go back and listen to the to where I said it. Do you know what I said after I said that?
No, I don't.
Okay. I don't either.
Parables.
Yeah. Yeah. From before the
foundation. Oh, okay. I may have used Proverbs instead of parables.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
That may have been what it was. All right. Thank you. I will tell Randy. Anybody have a question or a comment? If you just want to say what's happened, you know, what's happening in you right now?
My name's Neil. This is it's mind-blowing. I love coming and listening to you talk every time, because something always triggers something, some of the spot in my brain. And I'm Florida. I have a friend of mine that I think she would benefit huge from this series, or this set of talks. But it's just, I'm just Florida. I've never thought, I've always wondered the whole timeline thing. You know, well, when was I created? When? My mind's always wondered, is it possible that God made sent Jesus down and thought, well, maybe I'll see how he does. No, they knew he would succeed before.
Yes,
it reassures, and it tells. Like, I've never known where in the Bible it would say it, or if it did. But hearing that it says before the earth was created, I was thought about. I was part of it.
You were indeed.
I'm like, I'm very appreciative, and thanks God. Cheers.
Two mics, one for each side of my mouth.
Yes. We knew you had twice to say, so we knew we had to put out two of them.
Well, we can relate.
Yes, we can.
Would it be fair to say, this is something my father-in-law and I have been talking about for a while, would it be fair to say, reasonable to say, that Christianity in all of its variations, Islam, Buddhism, any religion,
right,
serves the purposes of God? Mm-hmm. In showing that we cannot live by our faith, mm-hmm. live by any law that might be dictated to us. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's fair to say, because when you're looking around in the world and you're trying to determine, you know, where God is in all of this, and mm-hmm. would it be reasonable to say that all of these things that actually work against the purposes of God, actually serve the purposes of God, mm-hmm. in showing us, humanity, over and over and over again, every generation after every generation,
gotcha.
That it doesn't work. And with having that mindset would make it a lot easier to relate to people in different religious groups or even different Christian religious groups with the same kind of love and compassion that God has for all of us.
Yes. All right, thank you. Did everybody hear the question? Okay. All right. It's obvious that those doctrines drove us here, right? All right. So we can say that this is what legalism can do. As far as it serving a purpose that was purposed by God, that we would have to say then that God's purpose and the ability to reveal that all of that was done at the cross was not done well by God. So the first thing that I would say in pertaining to your question is that all of the exhaustiveness of the law, as Paul said, the law was designed to bring us to faith, and that it was all canceled out after that. Now, can the law still do that? Now, if any of them really taught the law, it probably could. But the problem is, they not only don't teach the gospel, they don't teach the law, because they fragment the law. They tell you this part and that part. That's why there's almost over 40,000 denominations. It's basically different denominations which emphasize different laws. And so they give themselves excuses from this one and that one and the other one. And so does it, anybody that preached the law completely, it could have that ability, but it would not be because it was designed by God to do it now. It was designed to be done when the cross gave full revelation to the law, the Psalms, and the prophets. So obviously, though, in application, people that get under legalism can find the gospel. Show me somebody that knows their Bible, and I can convince them of the gospel better than somebody who's a pew warmer, as we used to call them. So if somebody's really involved in their Bible and they know their Bible, then we win hands down. The gospel wins hands down because you finally get to see things that are in context and they're just irrefutable. Now, on tomorrow at 2 o'clock, you're going to hear from somebody who is videoing this session tonight for us. And I'm going to try to say your name, and you tell me if I get it right. I know the first one is Nardos Kibidi. Did I do it right? Ah, I'm good. All right. Nardos is Ethiopian. And now if I say any of this wrong, you're right here. You can correct me. And last spring, I think, was the first time Nardos ventured into our sessions. And this is, I think, your fourth time that you've been, and had come just once and then came again. He has been a pastor of a local church here, and came to here. You need to talk to Robbie because he's been where you are. And I love getting these pastors all together. Wade Brewer, we're going to capture him for you tomorrow too. But these pastors, the reason this makes sense to you guys is because you know the Bible. Now, the more you know the Bible, the more the gospel in its reality is going to make sense to you, because there's some of us that studied enough to see the holes in the whole thing. And we have the questions, but we just don't have the right questions to ask. We see the problem, but we don't know the right questions to ask. So the gospel addresses all of those things. And Nardos here after that, you know, that's pretty cool to come and attend a session on something that has probably been a fairly radical departure from what his thoughts were. And then a year later, he's one of the speakers in the conference. So, you know, it can happen quick. It can happen very, very quickly. And in fact, I'm going to tell you this. I was speaking with Nardos just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I was appealing to him to share with you guys. And he said, I don't know what in the world I would say. These guys are like advanced gospel revolutionaries, you know. And I assured him that his story is what's going to be the most important thing, not what we know. And I'll guarantee you, he'll share something with you that I've never taught you. That's just the way this gospel goes, folks. I fully expect that you should understand the gospel better than I teach it. That's the way it's supposed to happen. You're supposed to understand it better than me. That's the power of the gospel, that the mouth that it comes out of, the ears, I've got one mouth, you got two ears, so you should understand twice as much what comes out of my mouth, right? Does that make sense to you? In my world, it makes sense, all right? So it's that's the wonderful thing about the gospel, is we learn from each other. I tell you, this small group right here has helped facilitate bringing this gospel around the entire planet because of their dedication and commitment to keeping these meetings going. They're relatively small. I mean, we got a packed house tonight compared to a lot of times. And there's been times I've come up here and we've just dispersed with the chairs and sat in a circle, you know, because that's who was here. But you know what? We've never quit. You guys never quit. And we just have kept going. And what has happened to all of us has been really, really powerful in understanding the gospel. Anybody else? Robbie, you got something you want to say while you're... Come on up. This is Reverend Robbie Orr.
No, yeah. There's only one Reverend. Not him. Taking the love of God out of the realm of between the cross and the beginning, you know, it's because when you're trapped, I can see what you're talking about, because when you're trapped in that, you love God because I repented, because I gave my life to him, because I tithe, because I'm a Sunday school teacher, whatever. It's always because of something.
God loves you for these reasons.
Yeah. But now you take it outside of that, and it's just for... It reminded me of a letter I think I wrote to you one time about when I first started understanding the gospel. I felt like I was on a diving board out in the middle of space, and there was nothing. I had to take a step off of that diving board, and there was nothing there to hold me but God's love.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. Thanks, Robbie. Anybody else? Come on up.
I think the first reference to milk is in Isaiah. Mm-hmm. He mentions it, and it's with respect to their understanding of the law and their compliance with it. Now, I notice in Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 speaks there and says, I have fed you with milk and not with meat, for until now you have not been able to bear meat, neither are you yet able. And then he says, are ye not carnal? And he starts bringing up their failures. Have you any comment as to why Paul would have done that in 1 Corinthians?
Right, in 1 Corinthians. The thing you have to remember about Paul's understanding of carnal, Paul understood carnal to mean legal. If you were carnally minded, you were legally minded. And that's what carnal was. Paul talked about a carnal commandment, remember? So the commandments were carnal. And the grace is not carnal. The love of God is not carnal. But sacrifices, laws, rules, and regulations are not carnal. What was that song we used to sing? Oh, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they are mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. And I'm sorry, but the way we started singing it was, the weapons of our warfare are not caramel, they are minty. And but the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, they're not legal. You don't, and everybody knows that we began to battle legally. That's instead of any battle that we have. The mind, where what people talk about, the pulling down of strongholds, the renewing of the mind, the pulling down of strongholds, the pulling down of strongholds is not the sex, drugs, and rock and roll that got up here. The pulling down strongholds, Paul said, is everything that exalts itself against the knowledge of Christ. Now, if you are under the law, it is exalting itself against the knowledge of Christ. What is Christ's knowledge of you? Christ's knowledge of you is that you are perfect and holy, without fault and without blame. So every thought that tries to tell you otherwise, and in fact he says we need to bring those thoughts captive to the obedience of Christ. Now, I used to try to make my thoughts obey Christ. But that's not what it says. He says for us to bring all those thoughts into captivity to the obedience of Christ. My thoughts, need to be informed that it's Christ's obedience, not how I think, that makes me righteous. That's how you take a thought captive to the obedience of Christ. When a thought condemns you, you take it captive and say, I can't be condemned by this dirty thought, or this thought of anger, or this thought of anything. Christianity teaches, oh, the battle's in the mind. Man, the devil's fighting for your brain, and you got to resist the devil and fight the thoughts and cast them out. Oh my gosh, what an exhausting game to play. I did that for many, many years. And you know what? I stopped having trouble with the devil when I stopped talking to him. You know, for some reason, he stopped talking to me when I stopped talking to him. So goodness, if there's a devil around me, I don't know who or what he is, because I have peace. You know, I live in my little house in South Florida, which is a 1,300 square foot double wide mobile home, and that escaped a hurricane. A mobile home escaped a hurricane. I'm very grateful for that, and I didn't pray. So you would say, well, Mike, somebody did. Well, good for them. I'm glad somebody else is doing all that for me. But you see, we took all of those things because of our legal mindset. We take all of those things and make them very legalistic, that we're going to fight our thoughts. If you get in a battle with your mind and tell your mind what it can and cannot thought, cannot think, you will start thinking those things more than you ever thought them before. It's like telling your mind, don't think about white elephants. Don't think about white elephants. I told you, don't think about white elephants. Don't think about white elephants. Don't think about white elephants. Well, there's only one thing that's going to stay in your brain. That's white elephants. And I tried to force my brain to obey Christ. But man, what a relief when I found out that it was to take all of my thoughts captive to the obedience of Christ, to his obedience. That it has nothing to do with my obedience whatsoever. Okay? Anybody else? Come on up.
And I look at the internet a little bit.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. A little bit. I'm not a very clever fella. And I read sometimes the letter L, L. Ray Smith. And he sounds a lot similar sort of understanding, a very clever man. He knows his job and everything from scripture. So anybody who wants to look at it, it seems marvelous understanding.
Wonderful.
The only other thing you were just saying there, which I couldn't understand, was you said that you didn't pray for your mobile home.
Yes.
Or does that mean you don't pray?
Yes.
Yeah, why? Have I missed something?
Well, first off, let me tell you where that started for me. And I don't tell other people not to pray. Number one, that is, I didn't say we don't pray. I said I don't. And I don't pray. I don't know what to ask for because everything's already been given to me, number one. And Jesus said that all of the law, the Psalms, and the prophets have been fulfilled in him. Now, if you look through the Psalms, it's a book of prayers. So I know that all those prayers have been fulfilled. And when I read through the Psalms, I can't find something that I wouldn't think I might need to pray today. So now, then you have the issue of prayer. Remember, Paul said that thanksgiving is a prayer. Now, if thankfulness is prayer, then I give thanks. The thing that happened to me, what is your first name again?
Bill.
Bill, the first thing that this process started for me in that instead of it being something I do, it's something I am. I am in a state of prayer all the time, regardless of what I'm doing or whatsoever. It's a state of being. For me, prayer is a state of being. Righteousness is not something I do. It's a state of being. So it's the very same thing as like in the Old Testament, everything that was a what became a who. Just like the sacrifices became a who. Everything, circumcision became a who instead of a what. Everything about the new covenant, about the old covenant that was a what became a who. So now, for me, on the work of that cross, where everything that was what became a who, I became a just a state of being of those things. So I don't even think about, I think about petitioning God, and I don't know what I would petition. You know, what would I ask for? And it's not like that I'm saying, oh, well, God, your will be done, because I'm convinced God's will was done 2,000 years ago for all of us. So that will is established. Prayer being a state of being, or if thankfulness is a part of that, as Paul seemed to indicate, then I'm praying all the time. Paul said, pray without ceasing. How do we do that? Well, if you're praying without ceasing, you must be in a state of being, most likely, because there's no way you can pray without ceasing unless you are in a state of being called prayer.
Can I just say a little bit more?
You can say a whole lot more if you want to.
I came over a couple of weeks ago. My daughter was having a baby.
Oh, congratulations,
she's had
a lovely
son, thank the Lord, right?
Yeah.
And it was a little bit difficult, gallstones and that. And I tell you what, I was doing a bit of praying.
Yes.
I was doing a bit of praying, and I feel good. I feel good now just mentioning I was praying to the Lord, you know?
Absolutely.
And, we love the Lord. The Lord loves us, and he's our Father. And who better to ask and pray than God? For safety and for my daughter. Nearly crying over it.
Yeah. I have no debate with you whatsoever.
Okay.
For people, see, just because I don't do something doesn't mean others shouldn't not do it. I remember when we first started teaching about the subject of sin, and I realized sin was forgiven once and for all, and I explained to people I don't confess sin anymore because it's an insult to Christ for me to confess what he has already forgiven. But I don't suggest to others that they stop, because a lot of people would tell me, you know, well, I just feel this need. Well, those people, I want them to keep doing that, because if they can't have a clear conscience without doing it, they need to do it until something changes. Am I correct or incorrect about prayer? It's absolutely irrelevant, because it has nothing to do with the gospel. Because the gospel is about the completed work of the cross, not about whether or not I pray or how I pray or even if I pray. Thank you. Thank you very much. And folks, that's what this is all about. I'm really glad that Bill came up and shared those things with us, because, you see, our goal in the gospel revolution is to share with you about the gospel, not about what to do or what not to do. We're never going to tell you to do or not to do anything. If you are still doing something, it's just like going to church. Now, there's many people who are a part of the gospel revolution. They stopped going to church. You can search the thousands of hours on my website and listen to this. I have never once suggested that somebody stop going to church. In fact, you'll find just the opposite to that. We had a caller call in to the program one time, and they told us that they still enjoyed going to church, and that was, I think they were Mormon, actually. And they said that they couldn't really get their mind clear about not going to church, and they were concerned because so many people were not going to church. And my advice was to them, please don't stop going to church. Please keep going. The only time you should stop going to church is when you can't take it no more. You know? And if where you're going to church is doing something in your heart and mind that you believe is beneficial, you should continue. You should not stop. But if the time and place comes to where that you find it more harmful than beneficial, you are free to go. Anybody else? Come on up, hon. Tell us who you are.
My name's Jacqueline. From here.
From here.
Yeah, Calgary. So you made a statement about the intention of Jesus was that, or before the foundations of the world, was that people do not believe, right? But then what about where in Matthew he says how he could not do any mighty works amongst them because of their unbelief, or where he said that, you know, having ears they hear not, but yet he purposefully said he spoke in parables and was esoteric about certain things. So why are you not supposed to believe, but then yet he couldn't do any mighty works because they didn't believe?
I think it's a good demonstration of what belief he was showing again, what belief, belief or unbelief could and could not do. Now, Jesus did go around and do mighty works. We know that.
In certain areas.
And obviously it wasn't people's unbelief that was stopping him in other places. But everything that Jesus did was to help us to understand something about the kingdom of God. Now, do I understand all those things? No, I don't. In fact, this whole issue about the fact that Jesus spoke all of these parables that were established, over 46 parables that were established before the foundation of the world, makes me want to go study parables, you know, because I know now I'm going to see them in a different light than what I thought. And you know, a few of them pop into my head, you know. Treasure, the hidden treasure in the earth, and that he bought the man in the parable says that the wealthy man bought the land so that he could have the treasure that was in the earth. Well, if you take that back before the earth was created, God created the earth and the treasure so that he could have both. Do you see how ironclad that becomes? If you come up with an idea that says, I'm going to purchase, that this is going to be the parable about it, there's a treasure, it's people. It's not, we say that that treasure is the kingdom of God, but that treasure is you. That's us. And we were in the earth. And he was designing this so that whether it was the earth or everything that dwelt in it, it would all belong to him. That was predestined for us before the foundation of the world. Oh, thank you guys. I've had a good time.